Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranjo. Welcome to episode 201. And I am very grateful that for the first time on the show, Jedi Mike is joining me. Mike, hello.
How you doing? Thanks for having me, man.
No, I'm really grateful you're here. This episode is a special episode because we are going to be chatting entirely about Daredevil Born Again Season 2. Now, you and I have both seen all the episodes, so we're going to be able to chat about what we saw. And when you're listening to this, all 8 episodes, that number has shifted from the last season, are available on Disney Plus. So we're going to chat about all of them. So full spoilers, you have been warned. Let's get into Daredevil Born Again Season 2.
Does Matt know?
You know what I think? I know that Matt, that mystery beside me, loves me in a way that makes every contradiction, every conflict in him and in me a part of us. And I'm willing to bet that that's the part that you can't really understand.
Professionals call that transference.
Yeah, well, I call it the truth.
Now, Mike, I think it's relevant, kind of before getting into season 2 as a whole, that initially, this was conceived by the original creatives as one full 17-episode season.
Yep.
What's been really interesting for me, and listeners of the podcast would know, but I will let you know, that for the most part, I liked the massive shift that they were able to sort of manufacture with the first season. And what was really interesting going into season 2 was, for the first time in the Daredevil run of the show in general, over the 3 Netflix shows or series into this one, is this is really a continuation of a story as opposed to loose threads moving forward. So this season does culminate the 2 seasons we've had, and you really do feel that by the end. Do you want to start with your general thoughts and then maybe we can dive more thoroughly into the finale?
I thought this season, season 2 specifically, learned from the lessons of Born Again season 1, which everyone, you know, aside from what you might know from behind the scene, that definitely felt a little bit like diluted of Daredevil essence we got from the Netflix era. And then this one brought back the right seasoning, the right, you know, essence and everything that all encapsulate to why we love Daredevil, but why we love that Netflix era so much. Not even talking about just the returning characters, but just more importantly, the tone, the atmosphere, and the weight, the narrative weight, what these characters are going through from the first episode to the finale. And I felt this was a lot more cohesive, and the pacing of this I thought was great, even though like people I remember were commenting about how maybe the beginning of the first few episodes were slow. But after 4, boom, we're off to the races. And I felt they definitely learned from their quote-unquote mistakes and backpedaling, which for other companies, this would have not gone well, of redoing at this point, 16 or 18 episodes and stuff. And it'd be like, no. And also bringing back actors that we already recasted, and be like, no, we got to get the original actors back. And then now we forget, like, that's just old history. That legit happened almost over a year ago. So it's just, it on paper, this shouldn't have worked, but they definitely learned. And I believe they succeeded in accomplishing that mission of bring back that essence of the Netflix Daredevil era.
It is hilarious because, I mean, this week, I'm sure you saw it as well. We all saw Avengers Doomsday because it comes out May of 2026. And obviously that was a massive shift from what we were going to get with the Kang Dynasty. It will be etched in the lore of the MCU how badly this probably could have gone.
Yes.
And I think the pivot being as successful as it was, and we'll talk about this at the very end of the episode, kind of where I think this season in particular sits amongst all of the Defenders part of the universe, because it's all been pulled in. But what I loved so much about this season was, I mentioned this already, but it's thoroughly a second season of something. So any missteps they might have had creatively with the first creative crew, and even with the second ones, kind of, you know, trying to buff out the bumps in the hood of Daredevil season 1 or Born Again season 1, was all of the groundwork that was laid just feels so rewarding. And I push back on the first four episodes being slow, because every significant moment in that first four,
yes,
build to, and I said this in my non-spoiler thoughts, I love Daredevil, but specifically the Netflix era onward. So the last 11 years was really when I started getting into reading more and more Daredevil. I've always been a longtime comic book fan of the character, but it's been more tertiary. It's not been somebody I'm reading dailies or monthlies of. But I made a point of, for Born Again season one, reading, I mean, I'd read Born Again, but reading specifically the Chip Zdarsky run and the Charles Soule run. And those two, I guess it works out to being almost 20 volumes of comics, have clearly heavily inspired this new era of Daredevil on Disney Plus. And each of the elements that they weave through has been something we've wanted, which are clear-cut comic book references, but in a way where this story feels solely unique to this show. And getting the aftermath of that first season, because I can understand creatively how some fans, you know, they didn't love Foggy getting killed off. But my standpoint was, this dramatically shifts what the show can be, because eventually, as much as I loved Foggy, things would start to feel stale. And the shift with Kristen, and then this season being much more about Karen and Matt's relationship, and we really get to see where they are in the aftermath of Foggy, as well as all the time she spent with Punisher, because the Netflix side never got to really address that at all with Karen, because they both got canceled.
You have to be there. And this to any of your viewers who, depending how old you were, or even when the time you actually got caught up with these characters, whether it was in the Disney Plus era or in the Netflix era. But if you were in the Netflix era, you have to remember the time when it was just a swarm of cancellations that was happening. And we felt we were just so devastated after one, after the other, after the other. And we just, fans were just so devastated, because it was just like, to have to put an end on these characters just when they're reaching, you know, the peak that these characters ever reach live action, it almost just felt a disservice, not only to the fans, but to the character. And I felt that what they did was giving a great opportunity to re-sanctify that, but also opportunities to expand beyond, you know, what we've got now with also the previous of a lower budget, but now you're with Disney now. So now it's like, yeah, you got all the backing that you need, and also in canon with the MCU, other toys you can play to make those stories more impactful, especially if you dive into the comics and not worrying like, oh yeah, well, that he interacts with this character, but you know, we don't have the rights for him right now. Like, no, he's down the street. So it's like, so I'm happy that we got, we're getting the Punisher special. I'm happy that we're getting all these Punisher and Brand New Day and all of that. Again, and a point that we thought that was only a mere possibility of just like a what if a Punisher or a Daredevil is in a Spider-Man movie. Now it has happened. So it's just, it's, and it took almost over 10 years to get to this point, but I'm glad we're here.
Yeah, it's so funny, because you'd have to have been around for the different eras of the MCU, but what was so compelling with that initial run of Phase 1, which was, and the revisionist history is just, it's insane. Those were not A-list characters when they were happening, and you had to tell compelling stories with these newer-ish characters within pop culture. Daredevil's been somebody who, if you're a diehard comic book fan, you've loved him. He's a massive slut, as comic book fans would say, of Matt Murdock, and that trend has continued. Yep. But this season really does focus on that relationship with Karen is so vital to who Matt is. And I really like, and it's something that I think the first season did stray away from, was him dealing with the aftermath of attempting to kill Bullseye, having Karen back in his life. We see Matt getting pulled back to that Catholicism and that torment he's clearly having internally with the guy he tried to kill, who's doing quote unquote good things, like the diner sequence, which is just
beautiful.
Perfect. Ugh.
Death's kiss.
And those two characters, no, I wouldn't even say they're on the same coin. They're different coins, but Bullseye in his brokenness, trying to do something he thinks is right, and getting the two of those characters to really have to work together. Like every opportunity to pay off that investment of over 10 years is rewarded in this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point about the emotional weight is like, yeah, people can watch this and who just only watched the first season and be like, okay, all right, I can still see this is a good show. But like, but I was tearing up, and even moments we'll get into where I literally was in tears in moments. I didn't think this was possible of the moments we were going to get here. And also like my mind transport me to where I was during that time watching Netflix there. I was like in high school, whatever, right? And I'm a grown man, married and everything. My life has drastically changed. You know, I'm a film critic, all this stuff, doing all these, you know, things that I you know, thought it was dream of doing and everything. And I'm looking at these characters who also have a span of time, you know, they have to wrestle with these characters as well. Not just with the actors, but just in terms of in canon, what they've gone through. And so when they have moments that have callbacks to like literally 10 years ago, I feel it more than just you just saying it as a line of dialogue in the screenplay. Like I feel it because I remember you doing that. I remember those interactions and how you jump from the first episode of Daredevil Netflix episode 1, season 1 to display a level of forgiveness and understand as we're getting wrapping the end of another character, but also reminding why this other character who's no longer living is so important, vital to this person's moral, you know, code. It's like all of that was just, again, chef's kiss. But that's why I'm saying if you have stuck out, this was a love letter to you. And Marvel's like, hey, we remember you and we thank you for still sticking with us. And we're going to award you with these character moments that now has now 10 years of backing on it. And I think that to me made it more powerful than just, you know, jumping into this season blind and never seeing what came before.
Oh, but I quite literally, Mike, have goosebumps with what you're talking about with that foggy flashback. And I think that in itself, from a narrative standpoint and the themes explored specifically in this season, to me at least, like, I don't want Foggy back because the significance of exploring the relationship, and you can do this. I've never been one of those people where what we see is all that happened. That cannot be all that happened. I mean, in a different show, The Pitt, you quite literally see the entire 15 hours. But in this show, like, there's been time apart. There is a way in which you can work Foggy in because he is a beloved character. But using that flashback specifically before even Daredevil season 1, if you experienced the entire gambit of that relationship through the 3 seasons and getting the reward to see Matt, and this to me was what was such a, it beats you over the head with the bluntness, but I think the brilliance of the choice to do this, which is this costume for Daredevil is his story throughout this season. He quite literally is in the black suit to hide in the darkness. However, there's still that semblance of the logo, which any fan of this character has been waiting for forever.
Forever.
And as the show goes on, realizing Matt on his own side, dealing with his morality and his belief in the justice system. And one of the best parts about this character is he quite literally is on both sides of the law. And on top of that, from a pure visual standpoint, the blackness and the darkness wearing away from the Daredevil costume to where at the very end, he is essentially in a full blood red costume with the Daredevil logo. And he is something that he had never been for before for the public. He is a reborn Daredevil, quite literally.
Yeah.
Where we get this character being that symbol, not only for Hell's Kitchen, but for New York. And winning that battle, I said in my non-spoilers, and so let me know if you think this is hyperbolic, but that scene between Kingpin and Daredevil at the end of season 2 of Born Again, it rivals Matt beating him at the end of season 3. Like, this truly does feel like the end of that book. And if we get more Kingpin, I'm not against that. Vincent D'Onofrio is a Mount Rushmore Marvel villain. Like, that's not a debate. It's a fact.
That's a fact.
And so if we get more of that in the epilogue, I'm really curious to seeing where it goes. But quite literally the gambit of that final episode, which I would love to dive into. I'm just going to mention a moment that you gave one, and I thought that was a perfect standout scene in this show and what it did for the story. But watching this final episode and kind of figuring out, like, not, I didn't guess ahead of time. I was thinking, because of the inspirations for this season, are they going to do the reveal? Like, it's very hard to put that genie back in the bottle. The MCU has been pretty blatant with how little identities they've maintained. And Matt Murdock is a character who has revealed he's been Daredevil multiple times in the comics. But to use the legality of Daredevil being a witness to the crimes committed on the boat in the harbor in the beginning, and using that as the precedent to be like, wait, we've established, we have the testimony from the first mate, and everyone has said Daredevil's here. So if we confirm that Daredevil's there, then we have a secondary witness to this crime to completely shift it. And most people, this is the case when they're watching these screeners, you're watching them on a laptop or a computer monitor, maybe your phone. I wouldn't recommend that.
I would not.
No, it's terrible. And your name is watermarked over the screen. It's a very privileged situation we are all in for the people who get this access. And when Matt threw his cane or his walking stick off of the walls, catches it and says, "I am Daredevil," I paused my stream and I was screaming because of what this means for the show moving forward. This is a monumental shift in the history of this character.
Yes. Yeah. And not only that, what led to it, like the fact that Kingpin whispered, knowing, like, we're not in the same room, we're in the same but I know you hear me. Are you sure you want to, you know, tread this line?
It's, and hey, it's like, you up?
Right. And it's like, are you, and that's like, I can say things that can ruin your life here. It's like, I dare you, you know, go ahead. I might beat you to it, you know? And he did straight up. And that was just like, again, the tension behind it. That was like now that's a Twilight move for some of you, Gen Alpha people that weren't even there during the time of like, oh, the people have superhero, but they're having conversations in the woods across acres.
It's nonsense. Absolutely nonsense.
But again, but to do that too. Now, I think it was a missed opportunity though, of like, because at the end it was giving Christmas, you know, with the Christmas lights and stuff, to have Daredevil have the like sweater, hey, I am not Daredevil, whatever, yeah, and stuff like that. But aside from that, to have that using the law, the legality of it, a way of using that to win the case too. Again, it's why, you know, the saying that, yeah, he is a really good lawyer, but he's one of the best lawyers, if not the best lawyer in the Marvel universe. And it frustrates me because I'm like, man, would you not get this level of writing of crime in She-Hulk, right? You know, and I think Jennifer Walters in the comics deserves and has done those trials like that before with those high stakes and everything. And I just feel like, man, such a fortunate that we can only do law with one character, you know, and stuff, and to the level of this good, and detail and everything. And I just felt like, for me, I would love to see this with other different characters in the MCU in a crime in a courtroom setting. And that's like, you know, what would that do? Like, even let's say Spider-Man went to trial or something, and you know, yeah, we actually see that play through, right? And again, there have been many cases, even like in the Civil War comics and too, with the Registration Act and all that. There's just things that the level of writing for that, and with these characters who are iconic, you got to be very strategic in terms of writing the screenplay for us as the audience to be engaged and just have our eyes glued to the screen, you know, from start to finish and not get bored or get distracted. We're focused. And that's what they did, where they kept that attention, even in doing the whole thing with his stick and everything. And it's like, oh, like, okay, that's excitement. And then it's like, all right, let's get back to the case. Hey, Daredevil's here. But now I'm still shocked. Like, and now I'm like, all right, I'm focused. Here we go. Home stretch. And that's, to me, I think, again, the pacing of that. And I agree with you when you're saying about what people comments about earlier this season about the first four. I'm like, to me, I thought this was beautifully paced. I was just like, I felt like this is, I went back in time, honestly. You know, and it's kind of weird just feeling that level of good, you know, storytelling, even to, you know, pace that we're watching episode by episode. We don't have to wait a week, but even if we did, it's like each episode felt you had enough narrative weight to process what was going on, and yet at the same time not feeling overwhelmed and feeling like, all right, Let's keep this story going. And that courtroom scene, again, is going to be a sentiment piece, just as we talk about the elevator scene in Winter Soldier. We're going to talk about this for years to come in MCU.
And what I found really awesome in that those first episodes, and I'm glad you agree with me, is it felt as if the first four were, I would say, like a roller coaster built for kids, where most of the drop is to like not wake you up, but be like, here's your thrill, where it's like up, up, woo, up, up, woo. And then four onward was continuing to build while adding in the stakes. And we talked about this very briefly, and I think it's a good pivot point, which is what I found really interesting in the marketing for this, because you have people who are curious about the show. This is one of Disney's probably most popular things with the MCU right now, given the state that it's in. Like, they put Jessica forefront in the trailer, and watching the show being like, okay, like, you marketed it her. And then just waiting. And story-wise, I love what they did with her. Again, this is, and some listeners might be like, I'm usually punching down on this, but just from a story standpoint, the thing that frustrated me with, and this is connected, Mike, with No Way Home, which was our cinematic debut of Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock, of course, was that it felt like Toby and Andrew's stories hadn't really gone anywhere since we saw them last. And what makes the writers behind this, and I credit them with this, they worked in the Netflix era, so they truly know how to work in that pool, and clearly they know how to swim within the Disney Plus MCU pool, is they made some bold choices. They moved stuff forward. And all of the scenes with Jessica move that story forward, where she's got the daughter, she's dealing with the powers, and there is a massive thing that was dropped in her conversations with Daredevil early on, which is like, yeah, some people made some deals with Mr. Charles, who's, I love that character so much. He's so entertaining.
Yeah, that, and I know exactly what you're saying with regarding with the No Way Home of using iconic characters and yet not actually being afraid to be like, because the reasoning why this is restraint, because you don't want them to overshadow the main protagonist and lead of the film. But to me, I argue that like you adding their stories and talking about the how they evolve since the last time we see them actually adds to the narrative weight and transitioning of those characters in the main characters in the protagonist story. When now I'm not talking to someone who's a loner, I'm talking to a mother who now has a child, right? And not, and even as a viewer, like, and this is where I get emotional about this. It's like, you know what Jessica had to go through to get to that point, you know? And that's what's really emotional about this, where people believe like they can't get endings like this or points in their life where they can have a family and have a children. I don't know why I'm getting emotional about this. It's just
really
like,
good show.
You know, it's just because I know what Jessica gone through. And then when we eventually jump into, it's like, oh, see now, oh yeah, no, her and Luke are together. And then like, they are raising this daughter together. It's like the people that were secluded and, you know, he lost his wife in the previous, you know, Luke Cage era, but like, no, he has a family now. Right. And that's what to me is like, was emotional to show the evolution of the character and act like, hey, it's been like 7 years almost, you know, since, last time we've seen these characters, almost 10 years, like less, and then in MCU time, almost now, almost like technically 13 years or whatever, you know, with the blip and everything. And so you have to add that context too. So it's just like, to me, it felt, I don't think that the writers should fear, because I know you understand what you think, like, oh, it's just going to overshadow. No. If they believe this overshadowing, we would just ask for another Spider-Man 4, which, you know, or Amazing Spider-Man 3, which, no, we weren't asking for that, even though for fans we were, you know, just being, you know, geeking for it, right? You know what I mean? But we just want to see the evolution of these characters, because we felt like, no, there's more to tell here. And yeah, you could have done that in No Way Home. Yeah, you might do it Doomsday. But anyway, but, you know, who knows? But yeah, that to me with Jessica, even the showing about her powers too, the fact now that she's a mother and seeing that, you know, and there's a comic reason for that pertaining to Danielle. But I just thought that was so great. And then Luke is getting to his Heroes for Hire era with doing contract work for Mr. Charles. And so, and then that adds a whole nother thing when we find out he's connected to Montaigne. So that, again, it just, it's, that's what it's saying. It's the building blocks. And now you have more toys for your disposal. But again, like, you're seeing the evolution of these characters that we've been asking for. And now we finally get them now in their full glory.
I can't stop thinking about specifically, because it is the best kind of explanation, is the way that they are playing with their toys. For our listeners, and I'm assuming Mike has seen this, in Toy Story 3, we have the caterpillar room, which is just absolute chaos. And you're like, yeah, there's a lot of toys in there, but it's not, it's insane. It's just a lot of stuff. And then you get the butterfly room and it's like calm and peaceful. And we're like, oh, or like Andy played. And not only is the stuff with Jessica awesome, but getting just the dynamic, and you see this, and if you, I mean, The Defenders was what it was, but just Jessica standing next to Matt in full costume, and to think on where she's come from in their relationship, where by the end of the season, she's got his suit ready in bag, and she's like, Matt, suit up, because she even has come to understand what this symbol of Daredevil is. It's just, it's the rewarding part of just this season for overall Netflix fans, and the understanding, it is, again, we've said this multiple times, but where they've moved these characters forward, because not just Jessica, but you brought up Luke already. The last shot of Luke from his show is him sitting in a club.
In a club, now being the head of his mob boss type of thing. And we're like, wait, this is where we ended this character with, like, in the anti, or almost like, you know, villainous, you know, role and everything. Mm-hmm. Hey, tell Claire to go home. Like, what? Like, you know, and that's what I got to sit on for over 7 years. Right now, I was 10, you know? That's the part where I'm just like, no, we're getting these characters back in their full glory. But then it's like, no, he's still in that nice made suit. Because, like, hey, I'm not just in the jacket anymore. I upgraded, but again, I'm still Luke Cage, and I still got responsibilities. I'm not this different character where I'm like a villain or anything. Yeah, I'm doing work, doing contract, but I got a family now to provide for and people that are depending on me. It's like, and that's to me where it's like, no, that's the essence of Blade. That's his cornerstone. So that makes sure that anything they do, like, he's gonna go back to that, you know. But yeah, that's what just made it so great. It just, yeah, I was in tears again when he showed up in the door. But anyway, yeah.
But the effectiveness of that story, like, it is brilliance with minimalism. Because again, a less well-executed show that I would say doesn't respect its viewers, and there might be a streaming service that's been getting kind of trounced about how it writes its scripts, but she doesn't say who. Right? Like, when she meets up with Matt on that rooftop for the first time and they talk about Mr.
Yes.
Charles.
Yes.
Right? She, in a less well-written show, she goes, and Luke left with him and I'm mad about it. Like, she lets the audience, who should be paying attention, know. And the resolution on that conflict through this whole season, and it's just, it's so funny but so satisfying as a viewer, is, we'll give you Bullseye. Give me Luke back, please. And just the two of them sitting on a plane. Perfect. Oh, it's just, it's perfect.
Yeah. And about, yeah, just the old thing about showing than telling, you know, but also when just allowing that line of dialogue, people are like, well, you didn't explain this or whatever. Like, no. The way, and again, this is also powerful when you have characters who have history with each other, is like, you didn't have to tell me his name. We were like, oh, really? And I bet you he didn't go alone. So, like, again, pertaining to another character. So it's like, that's where I felt like in some scenes that don't have to be communicated through dialogue, but just knowing just the history of those characters, make those scenes a power, like, trust your audience. And that when a show does not trust your audience, I know a lot of us can be stupid sometimes and jump to conclusions and everything. Like, you got to believe the amount of like theory videos I'm seeing people after me all seeing all the episodes. I'm just seeing like, wait, are you serious? Like, who's the father of Danielle? Are you serious? Is that not common knowledge? Like, why would you, you know? But it's just stuff like that. It's just like,
it's Rhodey's kid.
Right, it's Rhodey. That's where he's been. He's been absent. But yeah, no, that's where I felt like shows need to trust their audience. And that's also where you need to pay attention to viewers, but even the ones that are mature enough to understand storytelling and don't talk to us like we're stupid, where we're like, well, I got to show you from point A. But no, allow these characters to manifest in a way that you built 10 years of this character. It's a foundation of writing on them. Act like it. Don't act like you're writing a new show. Act like you're writing another chapter in this character story from what we've seen before. We're in an information age. There's nothing that we don't should not understand about these characters, even from on show and in comics, that we're like, I gotta explain this to you. No.
Well, and to jump off of that, it's one of the elements of the show that I like, because like it is different eras. So there's the Born Again and the Netflix era. But the Born Again era, specifically with season two, bringing in the BB report and having us see quite literally how people are feeling and the mirror to real world politics. This has always been an element of comics, and the way in which they use it specifically to talk about New York and bringing in, obviously, I always forget what the name of the acronym is. I want to say it's ACTV, but I think
that's the Anti-Vigilante Task Force.
Yeah, AVTF. Yes. And the way in which the public, unless they're negatively affected by them, what's the big deal? I don't understand what the issues are with Wilson Fisk. And we've talked a lot about Charlie Cox, and he's incredible. And I love getting to see Kristen Ritter. And I mean, if you're not listening to us thoroughly, yes, Mike Coulter shows back up at the very end of the show. Like, we'll just be blunt. Yes, he does show back up. No, Danny Rand doesn't. For those of us who are hoping for an Iron Fist recast, we're not getting what we wanted. But in terms of the actual arc for Kingpin, it's been so interesting to see Vincent D'Onofrio balance the two personas of Wilson Fisk, right? We get the guy who really does feel like he fits in with that idealistic version of him his mother thought he was, and then letting the madness slip through. And then, of course, and I'll get like, this is an indication this show's not afraid of pulling its punches. They killed Foggy in the first season, and then they killed Vanessa in this season. And just the level of despair and where that puts Wilson, leading to the conflicts that we have with Matt, like fighting in front of the painting. Like the symbol that was for that relationship quite literally falling apart, and where he is at the end of the show. Like you talked about the Twilight, hey, you listening, boo, and the conversations to that, and the level of the writing that the only reason that works is because Matt gets Kingpin to confirm Daredevil was there, but that would be enough, and that would be interesting enough. But then to also verify that Daredevil is in this courtroom. So that way, not only is Daredevil the second witness to the ship stuff, but he himself would be the second witness to, yes, Daredevil is here already with that. And the madness that resulting case has with Wilson. It's like, yes, we saw this guy kill somebody with a door, but just tearing apart the New Yorkers that he so allegedly said he was there to protect.
Yeah. And the savageness of it, where he like grabbing someone, breaking their back on a door, and then just continually just going down, just slaughtering, you know, everybody as he's going through. And part of this, you're thinking like, okay, I don't know how far this person can go. But then even then, like, realistically, if I don't want to jump into, you know, a political conversation, but like the speech that he gave right before they went in charging, right? There really should be either some citizens who believe and be on Kingpin's side be out there as well fighting each other. So instead of actually going against the top dog, basically the society or the city will be fluctuating on itself, you know, realistically, then all of the citizens just going up against, you know, the only people that just is that, you know, Kingpin's side is the task force, not the common man who's also being fed propaganda and, well, and misinformation and believing that these vigilantes are an issue, even per what the BB report, you know, exemplifies. So I just thought that to me was kind of like, realistically, it wouldn't have gotten that. It would just been a complete martial law where everybody would turn on against each other, instead of just everyone just going at Kingpin. He's the one guy that we all have to go up against. Like, that's to me a little bit anticlimactic. But at the same time, to have the interaction with the citizens and biblically, even how it emphasized of the falling of this king by his own, you know, people that he was serving, you know, by, you know, and by the common Caesar. Man, you know, yes, by the fall of Caesar. So it's like, that's to me where I felt where, you know, especially how that scene, you know, exemplified and how they're basically going to tear him apart. And then Daredevil and Jessica to jump in like, no. But like, but that's realistically, that's what happened. It's just been a complete mess. And because with no order, you know, there's chaos and all that stuff, right? And then there's no moral foundation. There's just, you know, we're all of this is just us being savages and, you know, tearing each other apart. And I felt to me where how they built that court case when they thought the court case didn't matter, when the government was even trying to pardon or to negotiate with Kingpin's like, listen, you have to leave the country. But it's like, and they're like, no. And he just kept, you know, turned down the offers and everything. While everyone's like, listen, you're the mayor, but like, you're being, you know, impeached. Like, you're done. I'm like, no, I'm not done. So, again, more exaggerated way of doing it. But again, it just terms of the emotion is definitely what it's like, what it feels like today, where, you know, where power and corruption is happening and then people not only trying to step down, it's like, no, and still reclaim their seat, as much as they try to also push the propaganda in their last call of action, you know, and there, because literally what it looked, it was an insurrection and in some form of capacity, but flipped in a way where like, no, they weren't going there to like, to actually protect Kingpin. They're going there to come after him. So it's just like, I think, it, you know, whether you want to talk about the double meaning about it, about who did that represent, if anything, is not really a political party, just in terms of how the city and citizens, when the lack of moral leadership and in corruption, the system, when it's so corrupted, the people that suffer is the citizens that, you know, in the community that lives in that city, to a point where they are the ones now clawing each other and everything. And for the sake of, they don't know, realize what they're fighting for. They're just there for the chaos. And that, to me, I felt him clawing through everybody shows the raw nature of that and more of the animalistic nature of this when order is on, you know, it's broken, you know, and that no moral compass is there.
Yeah, I think that's a great summary of where we find Kingpin at the end of the show. And it's only more magnified. You talked about like the lack of order and chaos in ultimately what allows Matt to have Karen's case dismissed. When Matt literally presents, this is what's going on, why this court, because she's being charged as like a domestic terrorist, and the ways in which this judiciary system is broken and by definition cannot deliver justice impartially. And the again, it's not overly complicated, in which I'm sure there's going to be like lawyers react to, but quite frankly, it works narratively and it sounds right. But I think the best pace to talk about now is kind of where this leaves things, because while it's sunshine and roses for half a second with Karen and Matt, we see Matt getting arrested because according to the law at this point, still vigilantism is a crime, right? We get the happy reunion between Jessica and Luke and where that could be going. And we see Kingpin on the beach that we saw in flashbacks. And Matt's smiling in a prison cell. What are you most looking forward to in, we know we're getting a season 3, and kind of where the future of the Defenders part of the universe could be going, Mike?
So there's two answers to that. So in terms of the Defender era of it, and we know Iron Fist is coming back. We know this mother.
We do? Thanks, Mike Coulter.
Right.
You
know, right. Mike, yeah, seriously. Seth photos, all of that at this point. literally talking to folks at CinemaCon, like, bro, like, why did they or just allow these pictures to go? Like, don't have no clue. I think there might be a way of at the time when Daredevil Born Again season 3 comes out, and after Spider-Man Brand New Day, because we see in the trailer that he's been given the key to the city and he was one of the vigilantes that came been, you know, called out. So, but at the same time, it's like, okay, well, what that leaves Matt if he's still in jail. But then people are like, okay, yeah, he's going to be in Brand New Day. And I was like, oh no, I don't know. But then I realized, I looked at the trailer again and realized that he's fighting the Hand in a prison cell. So, and I don't know if there is an opportunity where he have like a prison breakout scene, or in some way of, because of Brand New Day, that vigilantes in New York City will be turned to a new leaf in terms of by the public perception. And that way that will lead to now vigilantes actually going into the legal system and having Luke Cage actually run for mayor in season 3, like he did in the comics and stuff. And then we kind of gain more of how he's dealing with that. Also his corrupt past, because he was working with mobsters in season 2 and everything. So it's like, you know, what did that mean in terms of the government in New York City in terms of that time? So now that Defenders, now you have private investigator, you have contract heroes now trying to become a mayor, and then you also have vigilante who served the community but in prison because of him breaking you know, laws of vigilante vigilanteism. So it'll be interesting. But I kind of, now Kingpin, much as you said it earlier, it's like, this is a wrap up. But how now, because we're still going to have Vincent D'Onofrio, you know, in season 3, but like, have to a point, like, what's next for him? You know, he doesn't have Vanessa. He doesn't have the, you know, allegedly he might have a beard, you know, both of them. So, like, what does that mean? And what does that, his journey is into his character? You know, are we ever going to get Fist Tower? You know, I was kind of disappointed we didn't get Fist Tower in this, because that's a huge, centerpiece, especially within Spider-Man. So just like, I didn't know where else can we leave to go to tell stories of him if it's not, you know, interacting with Spider-Man characters and stuff like that. But who knows? But aside from that, I think that's what's going to happen is we're going to, after the events of Brand New Day, we'll get to see that maybe the perception of vigilantes in New York will be different. And Luke Cage going to run for mayor.
Yeah, I think that all connects to kind of where I think it's going to go within. Now, both of these arcs are kind of blended in my mind. So if somebody remembers it with an encyclopedic knowledge, I appreciate the correction. But I believe it's within the Chip Zdarsky run that Matt confirms he's Daredevil and uses the identity of Daredevil to essentially create a legal precedent that they are acting lawfully on behalf of the public, therefore decriminalizing vigilantes. And there's been a lot of chat about specifically like Daredevil D-Cell, which is, I don't think, where it's going. The reason they've introduced the Hand in Brand New Day is there's a run within that comic story where, while Matt's in prison, and there's been hints that this may be happening, that Elektra takes over the role of Daredevil while he's in prison, and the Punisher actually winds up leading the Hand. And I mean, Stick's dead, right? Honestly, I can't.
Yes, he is dead.
Stick's dead. But Elektra, Stick, and Daredevil in the comics form the Red Fist to take down the Hand, led by a magically drugged Punisher. So we know that Brad Winterbaum loves the Hand. He said so last year when discussing season 1. So I think there's a possibility of that. I don't know. Obviously, the stuff with Luke Cage and the mayor is really interesting. It does really seem like there's a possibility we just get a Heroes for Hire show, because I don't believe each character is going to be getting their own. It just, the way that Disney is choosing to greenlight certain things, I think that's likely what happens. Jessica, having reset up her private investigator office, I'm hoping is heavily involved in one of these things. She's obviously going to be in Daredevil Born Again season 2. It would be weird if she wasn't. But yeah, I think there's a lot of really interesting places to take the characters. And as was proven with the Netflix, I guess what, 7 seasons of TV in a combined shared story, that it's the most interesting stuff they've kind of got going right now. So just keep going as long as you've got interesting stories to tell.
Yeah, I agree. I think, to me, at this point, I don't want to jump to conclusions and kind of see, mainly, and after the set photos be revealed, it's like, all right, this is not no cameos. These are people who are part of the season. It's not a Defenders show, but it's a Daredevil Born Again season 3. What does that entail? And how are these characters going to get incorporated? How they evolved, like, now? Because at this point, there's a possibility we never will see these characters again. And I'm like, I'm more just happy the fact that we're here. But also now we're seeing them at different points in their lives now. Parents together, you know. Hopefully, visual effects wise, you know, maybe you picked up some, you know, some kung fu skills and everything, you know, with Danny Rand and everything. And or got you met Shang-Chi, you know, down the street in San Francisco. You might have took a trip there, whatever. Met him at the ramen bar. You might ask, hey, how you get, you know, can you show me a few pointers? But maybe that might be. And we can actually see some actual glowing fists more often because you have the budget for it. So, but yeah, other than that, I don't want to jump to conclusions.
Sure. I think we've pretty much covered everything. So if you're curious, listener, our spoiler discussion on Daredevil Born Again season 2 and where season 3 could be going is now over. Mike, thank you so much for joining me. I know we've had our conversations with DC Studios and multiverse stuff, but would you like to tell the listeners where they can find you on the interweb?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter and everything at JediMike7, brought to you by Solo Media. I just posted a review for Devil Wears Prada, and Disney and 20th Century Studios actually took my quote, and it's on the marketing materials and the trailers with my name on it. So first time that had happened, but that's, yeah, on Rotten Tomatoes and everything. So yeah, you can check that out. But yeah, you can follow me at JediMike7 on social media.
That is absolutely incredible, Mike. That's one of the dreams, and you've done it, dude. That's absolutely incredible. I can't wait to share that with people that I know and with the connected to this episode. If you're listening and you're curious why this episode is coming out when it is, well, it's going to be airing in line with the final episode of Daredevil Born Again season 2. So if you're listening to this and you haven't yet, episode 200 of the podcast was The Devil Wears Prada 2. And there's a pretty big announcement for what is going to be included in the podcast moving forward. So if you're listening to this and you didn't that one, I would highly recommend checking that out. Next week's episode of the podcast is going to be a review of Mortal Kombat 2. So make sure you're following on your preferred podcast platform and give it a like if you're watching on YouTube. Mike, I'm so glad we were able to make this work.
I hope to be back soon. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. I mean, we don't have to worry about Andy interrupting us. So it's like, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, I understand. But no, this is great, man. Thank you for having me.
My name is Kyle Naranya, and I will see you next time.